It's a night of Sunday, September 17th, 2023, and the show Winning Time just aired for the final time. HBO has pulled the plug after two seasons, and a magical few years have ended with the fucking Boston Celtics winning the NBA title. So I wanted to do a special bonus episode of Two Writers Sling and Yang, where my wife, Catherine, and I discuss the highs and lows of the show and the whole experience and what it all means and what it is to have a book adapted into a television series. And I do want to say that I hope, ultimately, we return to a place where quality of product takes a greater priority, where stock growth and financial ramifications can, if not be eliminated, at least tone down a hair in the name of legit quality. But I'm sort of old and out of touch and just a guy who writes books. It is what it is. My name is Jeff Perlman. I'm the New York Times bestselling author of 10 books and the host of Two Writers Sling and Yang, the podcast where one writer, me, talks writing with another writer every single week. And in today's bonus episode, my wife Catherine Perlman and I discuss the end of Winning Time, which, sadness be damned, has been one hell of a run. So let's sling some yang.
Dad, your podcast sucks.
And nobody cares about your stupid TV show.
All right, well, I'm here, and I just actually officially got word earlier tonight that Winning Time was over and that we got two seasons. I'm sitting here with my wife, Catherine, who was also, you know, very much involved and connected to the show. And I'll ask you before I go off, how do you feel?
I feel devastated. It kind of reminds me of my grandma living to 103, and you think, well, she had a great life, but then you're like, no, it's still devastating that she's not here.
Yeah.
So it's like the same. It's like, well, how lucky to have had that show. True, but it's still devastating that it's gone because it was so incredible. It was so much fun. It was just such a unusually special experience that it just hurts a lot when it's over.
Yeah, I feel the same way. On the one hand, it's a very, very, very first world problem. Oh, poor baby, you had an HBO show for two seasons based on your book. Like, you can't really complain, right? I mean, it's been great. And then at the same time, it feels, it just feels like a gut punch. It really feels like a gut punch. I knew it was coming. It wasn't like I didn't think it was coming, but I kind of had hope a little bit. And to find out it's over, and I'm just being honest about this, and maybe this is too honest, like, I think it sucks that the show ends with the Celtics winning the title. I think something has changed. You know, I've talked about this a little bit. I won't go too far into it, but back when I was at Sports Illustrated back in the day, it feels like they would send you places because it was a good story, right? They would send you places. They'd send you to New Zealand to profile a fisherman because, wow, that's a great story, and it makes us, the brand, better because it's better. And I feel like in magazines and all of media, TV, it does feel like much more bottom line oriented than it used to be. And the idea that, like, here's a show and it's early in its second season, but it's not getting quite the numbers we want. It feels like products like that don't get the chance they used to.
I am sure that is true, but I feel like this was a huge budget production. Like, it felt to me, and I'm not intimately involved with the budget, but it did feel like no expense spared, like top of the line songs, like huge scenes with so many people involved, like guys on roller skates holding the camera for, like, you know, the basketball scenes. Like, I felt that the clothing and just the research and just so much money was put into it that I think, sure, it's unfortunate when sometimes something is cut because, you know, it's expensive or whatever. But I do feel, on the other hand, it's like, well, they did give two seasons of, like, extremely high quality.
Yeah. I mean, I can't disagree with that. And it's interesting. I sent an email the other day to Casey Blois, who's the kind of, I guess, number two guy at HBO, almost like begging for the show to continue. And he wrote me back a really nice email, and I thought a classy email. And I do want to say, before we get into this a little more, like, from the beginning, Adam McKay has been amazing. Kevin Messick, the executive producer, has been amazing. And, you know, like, I feel like guys like Max Bornstein and Rodney Barnes have become friends and colleagues. And the guy, like, who, I mean, Jim Hecht, I can't say enough. You could vouch for this. I've never said a bad word about Jim Hecht. I've never had a bad thought about Jim Hecht.
I don't think you've said a bad word about any of them, honestly.
No.
To say bad.
But I just want to say, like, in 2014, my book Showtime came out. And this guy, Jim Hecht, reaches out to me. And he's interested in turning it into some kind of show or movie. And he comes to our house. I've talked about this before. He comes to our house on Easter Sunday, 2014, a bunch of Jews and Jim Hecht, also Jewish. And he, Earl, what did he show up with?
There was a tomato.
Yeah.
There was a hunk of like baker's chocolate.
Yeah.
There was wine drink.
Yeah, that was it.
Yeah. And I think there was a fourth thing.
No, it was a wine drink.
Yeah.
I mean, he might have brought like a chunk of mozzarella just because that would be in line with everything else. But he shows up. And I don't believe him. I just don't believe him. He's like, oh, blah, 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 the book and blah. And I'm like, okay, buddy, okay. And I gave him like the rights to negotiate with it for nothing, I think. And over the years, I just never thought it would happen, But he was always, him and Jason Schumann, who were the two guys, were like always just filled with integrity and decency and honesty and courtesy. And when it happened, it was crazy. And people have said to me repeatedly in interviews, this is a dream come true. But this wasn't a dream. I never had a dream of this. I never thought a show would come of any of my books. I never wrote to have this happen. All right, let's go over a few things. Number one, your favorite moment experience in our year. So Winning Time started shooting in 2019. So it's been a 4-year journey really for us of involvement in that way. What's your favorite experience?
I mean, it's going to be obvious. The day we spent on set was... I mean,
so is it 2019?
We're not in this world at all. So it's now it would be special, but it wouldn't even be as special as then. It was like we walked into like behind the curtain of like the coolest thing that ever lived.
It was on the Warner lot, near the Warner lot. Actually,
no,
it was on
the
lot.
It was at the Roosevelt Hotel.
Oh, you're right. Okay, Roosevelt Hotel. Go ahead.
It was like they had the draft room set up and all these different rooms set up and we had a trailer and we had clothing picked out for us and all this stuff. And I remember getting put in my scene, which I knew absolutely nothing about.
You have to explain. You were playing the secretary to Rod Thorne, the Chicago Bulls general manager during the 1979 NBA draft.
Yeah. So, I mean, I might've had like basically you telling me that one sentence, like
synopsis
of what was going to happen. So there I am, I'm standing behind the desk and I'm acting, which is not at all my thing. And I'm looking over and I see you and Gabby Hoffman giving me the thumbs up. John C. Reilly is walking around in there. I'm hearing direction from Adam McKay in the other room. It's just like truly an out of body experience. And I wasn't even nervous because it was just so much fun and so exciting. And also the way they treated you, like everybody was so deferential and so kind to you. And they gave you a round of applause. And there was like just snacks. And it was just parking. It was just
I have amazing. To say, you're a social worker. So you're not, at least in journalism, I'm used to this a little, you're not used to free snacks.
I'm not used to free anything. So it was just honestly a truly magical day. And I remember us leaving and I had my hair was still all done up and I had a million pins and I'm picking them out. And we decided to go for an expensive sushi dinner to celebrate because we were on just such a ridiculous high. Like we couldn't even just come down. It was just such a great day.
The funny thing about it was, all right, we had a parking space. We had a trailer where our names are on the call sheet. And they misspelled my last name. And I wrote the book and they misspelled my last name. We have the same last name. P-E-R-L-M-A-N. So that was funny. For me, I would say my highlight was, and you were there for it, was the premiere party, which is one of the great, for season one, which is one of the great, truly great nights of my life. And I brought our kids, Casey and Emmett. And you're making noise with the sheets.
Sorry.
And I brought Casey and Emmett. And first, I remember they were excited because there was a black car that was going to pick us up and take us there. And then we get there and there's a red carpet and Jim Hecht was very insistent that I walk the red carpet. You know, I get embarrassed easy, but I walk the red carpet.
Wait, I just want to say something.
Yeah.
Thank God you did because those pictures of you in your fancy suit and you look amazing.
I got my Adidas, glasses, my white Adidas.
Your Adidas is like, those are the best pictures ever in your life. Yeah. Better than your wedding. You look amazing.
Thank you. And always a better day than my wedding. And might have been. It was... Wait, it was insane.
It was. It was a more fun day than the wedding.
You weren't there, unfortunately. No. So Catherine wasn't even there. She was away with her mom on a trip, but I took the kids and it was just like, there was a moment, I've talked about this, but there was a moment when it was before they were showing the first episode and it was in this movie theater and it was packed and Adam McKay stands up and I'm sitting next to my son and daughter and Adam McKay says something like, I want Jeff Perlman to stand up. Jeff is one of the great American sports writers and blah, blah, blah. And just being there next to the kids. And then later, my son and daughter and I all smoked cigars with Michael Chiklis, who plays Red Auerbach. And it was such an awful, amazing parenting moment. Awful because I'm smoking cigars with my teenage kids, but amazing because I'm smoking cigars with my teenage kids at a premiere for a show based on a book I wrote. And it was just phenomenal. You know, just phenomenal. And
I want to say my second favorite memories, which I think you would also agree to, are both times we had parties for cast and crew to come to our house and watch the show. Because watching the show with people who are in the show, and even when we did it in LA, same thing. It's like watching people watch themselves and all the inside giggling and jokes and just watching these people transform. I mean, that's just, we've never had that opportunity. It was really incredible and fun. And these people are all just like normal, warm, fun, interesting people. And so to watch them do their thing and to celebrate with them was just amazing.
Also, a couple of things about it. All right. So we had a party a few weeks ago, and because of the strike, we didn't make a big deal of it. No one posted pictures, but we just had people over to kind of celebrate almost the togetherness of it all. And we had about 50 people here, 45 people here. And what I really liked is Tamara, the actress who plays Cookie, Magic's wife, is, first of all, I've said this in the beginning, the woman is like a butterfly. Like, she just floats and flutters around and she's so delightful and just a joy and radiant. And when it was the episode with episode six with her, she had a lot of scenes in it. And watching her watch herself in the show was just amazing. And the other thing, like, I just love is, like, we had this party. We've had two parties here for the show. And it's such a crazy, diverse group of people, not just in the cliche way of race, but like age and gender and geography. And it's like, there's something really invigorating about being surrounded by creative people. I just love that. I love being surrounded by creative people. I love having creative people around. I love getting conversations with creative people. And I just thought it was like this bountiful fest of creativity.
Also, because there are a lot of young people who this was kind of their first big deal.
Yeah.
So it's kind of amazing to have this experience with them when they're also experiencing this like wow factor.
Yeah, no, I agree. And there are a few, I'll talk about a few people here. So, you know, I've had chances to, I had conversations with Adrian Brody and John C. Reilly, and they were all cool. And Jason Segel, really nice. And Brett Cullen, you know, like really nice people. But to me, the people we really connected with were the younger first-time actors, first-time big-time actors. And I remember being on set, you weren't there, the first time I saw Quincy Isaiah, who plays Magic. And Quincy was a football player at Kalamazoo College. He had no IMDb page, no known acting experience. And I remember he was walking by with the Lakers. He was wearing his Laker uniform. I don't remember if you remember this. And I FaceTimed you. And I was like, hey, Quincy, can you say hi to my wife? And he goes, hey, Mrs. Perlman. And I was like, oh my God, we're so old. And he's delightful. Like when he came to our house, he just had something about him that like you rooted, right? I mean, just something you would root for in that guy.
I feel like everyone that's on the Lakers team, I loved, you know.
Delonte, well, Catherine's favorite was Delonte D'Souza, who played Michael Cooper. You just love that guy. And I want to say something about, so Delonte, first of all, was great. And what I loved about Delonte, besides the fact he's just a really nice guy, is, he was like this is what I love about the show. He was flipping houses in Maryland and he had done acting and he was a runner in college, but he was flipping houses. That was his job. Nothing wrong with that. But he saw a casting call. He knew nothing about basketball. He didn't play basketball. He was not a good basketball player. His audition tape still makes me laugh because he shoots a free throw kind of like, you know, not someone who's good at basketball. And he's so endearing and so kind and so warm and a really good actor. I don't know. Who else did it for you? Who did you become a fan of from this experience?
I mean, I'm a fan of everyone mm-hmm. we met. Truly, there wasn't anyone that I was like not a fan of. But seeing Sean's transformation into Larry Bird, it was just, I couldn't, wrap my head around it. Like Quincy Isaiah looks like Quincy Isaiah playing Magic, who also looks like Magic. Like it's there, but you still see Quincy. Mm-hmm. But like, I don't see Sean in Larry Bird. Like he's just, the transformation's amazing.
Yeah. And I've said this on the show, but Sean is, I think, 20 years younger than me. And he came and he played in my pickup basketball run. And we've become pretty good friends with Sean and his wife, Emily. And Sean comes down to play pickup with us. This is maybe 2 months ago, not with us, with me on my Saturday morning run. And he's starting to warm up and he shoots just like Larry Bird. And he was a good high school player, but he said the trainer for the show actually rearranged his shot to look just like, to be Larry Bird's, and he shoots like Larry Bird. The other guy who I've become really, had it developed a nice friendship with is Solomon, who plays Kareem. Another guy, like no real acting experience and just a really good guy. And also, I mean, we became tight with Austin Aaron, who plays Mark Landsberger, with Newton, who plays Jim Jones. Just developed like some really, Karina, who played Paul Abdul, was at our house, and she's like a butterfly too, just a delightful young woman. And like,
I will say on the opposite end of the spectrum, like those are all, you know, young people who are kind of breaking in. Mm. Spending time with Spencer Garrett and actually watching him kind of be a mentor to the younger people. Like he's just such a generous, warm, nice guy. And I just loved seeing him, not just how he was friendly to us, but just kind of more how he was with the, you know, the other actors and just being such a mentor in a way.
Yeah. All right, I'll go some controversy here. I'm going to tell you the things I didn't like about the show. You give me some things you just made a face. Nothing horrible. I can tell you my least favorite parts of the show. It's over. All right, my number one is, and this is not against the actor himself, the casting of like a very old man to play Dr. J. I kept hearing about that. That was not good. I mean, he just looked way too old for Dr. J. And Dr. J was like 32 and the actor looked like he was, you know, 50. And I think the actor was 50. That's just crazy. That didn't work out. I never liked in episode one.
I know what you're going to say.
The white party.
I knew it.
Never. It didn't happen. I know what they were trying to do. It's not that the scene was bad. A lot of people liked the scene. I thought the parts in the show that were best is when they actually really happened or there's some closeness, proximity. And that just didn't happen. That was just something they used as a method. And I will say as the show went on, they went through a lot of efforts to really fact check harder. Like I think I think some of the criticism from season one stung a little bit and some of it was fair and some of it was justified. And the other thing I felt a little weird about was I thought Jason Segel, I think he's a great actor and I thought he was really good in this role. I just think Paul Westhead is a better coach than they made him out to be. And Paul Westhead had a very long and distinguished career. He did a lot of amazing things. He was a little dunderheady at times here. And I didn't always feel like it's funny because I thought the Jerry West portrayal was pretty on. And if you read Jerry West's autobiography, you'd be like, oh, this is exactly who he's talking about. I think Paul West said that one bothered me a little. What about you? Anything you didn't like?
I can't really say, but I will say you remind me of something else I did like was every time Jerry West was in any scene.
Every time.
It was amazing. Stolen. He was just riveting.
Yeah, Jason Clark just nailed it. Yeah. He was, I'll tell you also another guy in this show who I thought, at times I thought this is the best actor on the show and it's a loaded show. Is a Devon as dad.
Nixon.
Norm Nixon, Devon Nixon, who played, by the way, it was Whitney Houston's son in The Bodyguard. Devon was.
Wait, this was actually one of my favorite things when we watched episode 6. So Devon is playing his dad and he's dancing with his mom, who was Debbie Allen, right?
Yeah.
So everyone was sort of giggling about the fact that he's dancing with who is his mom. Like,
Did someone say something?
Yes, they said something and it was very funny.
Grinding with your mom or something like that.
It was funny.
Actually, interestingly, Debbie Allen, not his mom.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Debbie Allen, it's his stepmom. But yeah, no. Mom, yeah, but right. That was actually, that was really funny. Another thing we kind of skipped over. When we were, when we did that first episode, which ended up being the pilot episode that aired, watching, what was I going to say?
The commissioner.
Oh, I was going to say that. What were you going to say?
Oh, I feel like our first like entrance to the acting world was on your scene, really, when the commissioner was doing his scene. Like he was so all in and it was just fascinating.
Yeah. No, I was going to say watching Adam McKay.
Oh, yeah.
It felt like, well, all right. So Adam McKay directed Hands-On the first episode. And it was like watching a guy who's done an orchestra, you know, like head the greatest, you know, just the greatest orchestra in the world happen. And he was so seamless. There was one point that I love when Catherine had a line, the Bulls lose the coin toss to Lakers. Lakers are going to take Magic Johnson. And Catherine's line is, well, I like Sidney Moncrief. And she actually said Monfield. She goes, well, I like Sidney Monfield. And everyone just started cracking up. And I can still hear Adam's voice going, that's Moncrief, Moncrief. And I just like, he was so smooth and like buttery and just knew everything, every moment. There's no ego shown. There's no arrogance about him. Just like butter.
I was actually completely wowed by him. Like, I just felt like this was like watching a genius. I mean, he knew absolutely everything and he had such a interesting hand and everything. It was really cool to see.
Here, I'll throw some controversial questions at you.
Oh boy.
Do you think we have a different end if the strikes never happen?
Yes. I think the strikes very much impacted the show. And that actually, I was thinking, this makes me feel so sad. It's like, so here are these young actors and they've gotten their shot. And especially like I'm thinking about Sean, you know, his big time, you know, Larry Bird having such an impact on this season. And it's like, you couldn't promote it the whole time and then it's over. You can't even grieve in public because you couldn't even have posted that you were in the show, let alone now get sympathy because it's over. You know, it's just, it's like, it feels almost like a miscarriage that you can't talk about.
I also, I think it's a really bad sign for a show when the goober who wrote the book is the biggest promoter. And I was like one of the few people who could promote this show. Like, that's pathetic. Like that.
There was no choice.
I know there was no choice. I get it. It's a strike and people are very loyal to it and they should have been. But like, that's a bad sign when you have Adrian Brody, John C. Reilly, Rob Morgan, Jason Segel, all these big names, Sally Field was involved. And like, no one can say a word about it, you know? And, I'm crushed. Like, I'm actually crushed. I am. And the number one reason I'm sad about this, and I swear to God, like, it's not, we didn't get rich off this. Like, anyone who thinks like you make millions of dollars, or like, I know with the Blind Side, there's all this talk of how much money Michael Lewis made and blah, blah, blah. And the two he's made, like, it's money that helps put a kid through college. Like, it's nice money where it's been lovely and great. But honestly, for me personally, more than anything, it's Quincy, it's Sean, it's Austin Aaron, it's Newton, it's watching these people, Delonte, these young actors get their chance. It's being involved. Like, actually, I've said this so many times and it's true. I think 95% of the time, the rights to a book are bought. Oh yeah, you should come to set one day, and you come to set one day, and I shake Quincy's hand and I take a picture and that's it. And it's been phenomenal, phenomenal how involved I've been. And I can't say enough about Kevin Messick, the executive producer who I've talked to for the last 6 months, probably, or a year, probably three times a week, watching all the casting footage, asking my opinions on what do you think of this guy? What do you think of that guy? The fact checking, the details, just like nonstop involvement. And I feel so connected to the show and the idea that it's just over and that's it.
Maybe now you finally understand how great summer camp is and when it's over, how sad it can be. You never like camp, you never got it, but now you get it. It's like you have this incredible life-changing experience and then poof, it breaks up.
Yeah. And I was prepared for it to be over. I knew for a couple of weeks that it was probably over, but it being over, it's kind of carved me up. And I'll kind of wrap with this as one thing. I mean, if you watch the season, episode 5, I play a reporter and I was so excited to get the opportunity to play anything in the show. And they gave me lines and I was so nervous about the line. I mean, I studied these stupid lines. I had 3 lines and I was so nervous about the lines. I literally wrote the lines on my hand and I played a reporter at a press conference. And I went in early. You weren't there for this. And I got a wig and I got all this wardrobe. And of course you walk around craft services and, and toward the end of the day, I mean, I never want to be an actor again. I never want to act again. It's shot 100-something times. It was maddeningly dull. And my head started itching. And that night I started having like bumps all over my head. And one person we haven't mentioned is someone we've become really good friends with, which is Caitlin O'Connor, who plays Diane Cannon. Mm-hmm. And I called Caitlin because I know she's acted a lot. And I was like, I think my head's exploding. And she's like, do this, do that. And the next morning I wake up and my head is just enormous, like an eggplant glued to my head. And I go to urgent care and I had an allergic reaction to the wig glue. And
is that a sign? Is this like foreshadowing?
Well, I think the thing is, I'm so happy I did it. And I'm so happy I have that snippet of time where I played on HBO, where I played in a show based on a book that I wrote. And
you played yourself.
It actually says in the credits, Jeff Perlman playing yourself. And it's funny because at the party, the actor who plays Brent Musburger, great guy, John, great guy. He goes to me, we're talking and he's like, so did you really cover that press conference as a reporter? And I was like, John, how old do you think I am? Right? I mean, I would have to be, I'd be 75 years old now. Maybe I look 75.
One thing I will say about that scene and that whole episode afterwards, we did go back and you read me from your book. And that whole episode was so much taken from your book, which was actually just thrilling. It was just so cool. Like you wrote about that scene and then it was in a show and you played a reporter in that scene that you wrote about. It's just crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the attention to detail in the show was really outstanding. And I guess like to kind of wrap this short episode up is number one, years ago, again, when Jim Hecht and Jason Schumann reached out to me, I was a very skeptical person. I didn't believe any of this would happen. I just thought they were full of shit. And not only have they become really good friends, but like they kept their word and they delivered. And this has been amazing. And that was one of, I mean, you know, of our married time, it's one of the most exciting, coolest experiences of my life. And like, I'm very sad in the same way. I remember 1985 when I had my bar mitzvah. I swear to God, I remember this. I remember this feeling. I don't want to brag, but it was at the Mount Kisco Holiday Inn. And I had this bar mitzvah. And I remember at the end of it, sitting outside in the lobby and just being really sad that it was over because I had this fun party and then it was done. And like that, on the bright side, you had the fun party and the downside, it's over. And you just have that feeling, that pit in your stomach. And I don't know if you feel that way, but that's exactly how I feel right now. I feel very just sad. That's grateful, but sad that's over.
Yeah, I feel that way too. I feel grateful and sad, but I feel more than anything just how special it was to be able to go along for the ride and just have this really fun experience to meet these really interesting people. And who knows what will be next?
That's true. But I feel like these things don't happen very often. So when people are like, who knows, you know, blah, 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 it's just the beginning. Like it might be just the beginning, or this might be as good as a guess. Like this might've been the amazing, there will never be a higher moment career-wise for me, truly. And it would have been better if you were there. So I'm not saying that, but sitting there next to the kids and Adam McKay on a stage, having me stand up. That's just that stuff. You don't get that much when you're a writer.
Maybe
it's mostly isolation.
Oscar. Maybe. Someday.
Wow, really? Oh, for Dream best. Big. What about Emmy for best reporter playing himself?
I was thinking Oscar for the best sports book that's been adapted to a movie.
Maybe. You think?
Mm-hmm.
All right, then.
Never know.
Well, we've had a journey, haven't we?
Yeah, and I want to say I'm very proud of you. You can poo-poo it all you want, but you wrote this amazing book because you do a lot of research and you hunker down and you call a gazillion people and you put it all together like magic in this book. And you created this whole universe that wouldn't have existed if you didn't write that book. I mean, the Lakers existed, but no one had put it down together in a way that would have made it into a show. So
I appreciate that.
I'm proud of you. Thank you.
From Donna, the secretary of the Chicago Bulls. Well, I do want to say it's funny. Her character didn't have a name, but Adam McKay called her Donna. And that was 4 years ago.
No, what happened was, it was Rod Thorne is his name, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So Rod Thorne was like, you know, acting. And he was like, well, what's her name? Like he wanted to say my name. And so then I guess someone said Donna.
He did. Adam did.
Yeah. So that's why he said Donna. And then the reason we remember is because of what Rod Thorne said.
Yeah. So we've been calling you Donna for years. And I also want to say when you had COVID, Quincy, Sean, Newton, a bunch of those guys did videos for you. Like they've just been the people are just really cool and really nice people. And it's been great. And I do want to say, touching on what you said, there was a moment during a filming first season when Delonte, who plays Michael Cooper, was sitting there and I was talking with him backstage And he said, do you ever just like take a second and think how none of this happens without your book? And I honest to God, I'm not just saying this like fake humble. Like I don't really buy into that because the Lakers happened before my book and someone could have taken a Lakers story and done it. And there have been other good Laker books, but like it was such a nice sentiment, you know, and it's just like, I've just, the people, the number one takeaway for me from this is just all the lovely people we've met. And hopefully we stay in touch with most of them or some of them, because it's just been a awesome display of kindness.
I agree. And even though you're allergic to weak glue and you were bored on set and it was a long day of acting and you're not interested, I will say, Astana, I would happily, if anybody's looking for a middle-aged mother of two who has absolutely no acting experience except one day playing a secretary, I'm available.
Can we talk real quick about the one thing we noticed about your scene?
No.
We can't talk about it. What?
No.
Really?
No.
Not talk about it.
No.
So that's enough.
Secret.
Secret. The show will die with the secret about Catherine. See, was that a laugh you just did?
Yeah.
All right. Well, Catherine, thank you for doing this.
Love you. Really proud of you.
Yeah. Well, now are you still going to stay with me now that I'm not a big time Hollywood insider?
Let's see.
All right. Thanks, Earl.
Okay.
I want to thank my wife, Catherine, but really, I want to thank everyone who has watched Winning Time through the years. And I say that on behalf of the cast, the crew, the writers, the creators. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Truly, thank you. Bullshit y'all talking about. Out your mouth, I'm not concerned, cause y'all got to learn. It's y'all turn like Detroit Red when his head had an ultra perm. The long walk, I burn your bare heels, so throw on your boots. The game camouflage like army suits, but I can see it more clear cause I came with the